Welcome to the Classical Happy Hour. I'm your host, Martin Davids. This is the show where my guests and I talk about music while enjoying a tasty beverage. Then we try to play some music together. Today's guest is Jonathan Cohen. Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, how's it going?
Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure.
It's been fun meeting you the last few days. For my listeners that don't know you, can you just talk about what you're doing for work these days?
I'm a musician. So I play the harpsichord, cello, I conduct, and I work mostly in Baroque and classical music. I work in Quebec City with Le Violon du Roi, music director there, and also in Boston with Handel and Haydn Society. And I have an orchestra in London called Arcangelo.
So do you play the cello with any of those groups?
Not really. I don't play cello so much these days. Sometimes chamber music. I have some friends in Hungary that get me out to play the cello with them sometimes, which is great. Actually, I really enjoy it. I kind of miss it a bit, but, you know.
Yeah. I didn't know you played the cello.
Yeah, okay. I was primarily a cellist for my first part of my career, and then I kind of shifted over to keyboard, and I became an assistant conductor in Paris with William Christie, Les Arts Florissants. So I was working a lot in London as a cellist, you know, with the Baroque bands, Philharmonia Orchestra a bit as well. And then I met Bill in Glyndebourne when I was playing the cello in the Age of Enlightenment Orchestra, and he got me over to France to assist him as assistant conductor, and then I sort of had a gear change and moved in a different direction.
So did you already know how to play the harpsichord at that point?
Not really, a bit. You know, I was always really interested in it. When I remember when I was playing in the Baroque bands, I'd always leant over to the harpsichordist and said, just do that slowly, that was really cool what you did there. And I was always sort of paying attention because I loved the harpsichord. I was always played the piano since I was little, so I had a kind of keyboard facility, and then playing with a lot of harpsichords, they kind of absorbed a bit of that, and then I did a bit of study on my own. Never really had any formal lessons as a harpsichordist, but I sort of picked it up, let's say. You know.
Did you have to do, like, for me at Indiana University, I had to do a harpsichord proficiency when I was studying Baroque violin.
Oh, yeah.
In order to graduate.
Yeah.
And did you have to do anything like that? Were you to do continuo?
A little bit. I remember I went to the Royal Northern College of Music for 1 year because I then sort of absconded and went to Cambridge, and I did musicology there after the I sort of left the Royal Northern, which was focusing a lot on cello and I remember when I was at the Northern, I was really interested in the harpsichord. I was always in the early music room playing the virginals and the harpsichord, so yeah, I always had the sort of parallel interests, you know, around music. I didn't really feel cut out to be a sort of with one focus, you know. I was always really interested in everything else that surrounded it a bit, you know. I loved the harmony and counterpoint lessons, the improvisation, the academic classes as well, you know. I'd often be the only one sometimes in some of the, when I was at the Northern. So I don't know, I was always kind of interested in the big picture. I was not so good at being really focused on one aspect of music.
Like pop or etudes, for instance.
Yeah, well, for example, you know, I mean, I had a lot of admiration for those wonderful musicians that they would go into a practice room for 6 hours a day and do their scales and arpeggios and concertos, and I don't know, I just felt that I couldn't bring myself easily to do that. I didn't have that kind of laser-like focus that actually you probably need these days, don't you, to go and pursue a career as a soloist or something. You need to really have that laser-like focus. I didn't. I was a bit more of a sort of all-rounder, a kind of, you know, yeah.
Well, we need all kinds,
well,
right?
Well, exactly, yeah, exactly.
Not everyone's going to be a soloist.
Yeah, yeah.
And we don't want them to.
Mm-hmm.
So you said musicology. Was there a specific area that you specialized in there?
Not really. The course at Cambridge was very, you could choose different modules and things like that. I remember looking, doing the Romantic Symphony was a course, and also notation, you know, was making editions from lute tablature, that kind of thing. So it was quite broad based. There was a science bit about acoustics. I can't really remember anything in detail apart from there's a big sort of springy thing that people were using to demonstrate how sound bounced around. But
springy thing?
Yeah.
The monochord or something?
It's a ticker tape, like a physics thing. I was never very gifted with physics or science, unfortunately.
Well, you can hear sound waves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yeah.
And different pitches.
Right.
So is your family musical?
I'd say a little bit. Yeah, my father is amateur pianist. He loves piano, and his mother, my grandmother, played a violin. She was an amateur violinist and had string quartet sessions with lots of other, you know, grandmas and grandpas. I remember when I was a teenager going around to play string quartets with granny's friends with sandwiches and things like that. So I think my dad and his side of the family were particularly loving of music, I think.
So, I mean, typically you don't end up in college for cello without starting pretty young, right?
Yeah, I started, I think, the piano first, age 5, and then cello when I was aged 8. Something like that. Yeah, cello probably because my grandpa played the violin and my dad played the piano, so they needed a cello player to play piano trios at the weekend. So I was put on cello, yeah.
Well, I'm sure you have lots of good memories.
Yeah, really. I mean, you know, my dad took me to concerts in Manchester where I grew up, you know. So it was very much something that was very, very valued, I think, in our family. And I think that's very lucky for a kid, isn't it, to essentially have that support where your parents think that's a fantastic thing to do and they encourage it and push you on it, you know. I needed pushing on it for sure. I wasn't very good at practicing when I was little, so I suppose I was, you know.
It's a rare person that is motivated as a kid, you know?
I think it's harder now, isn't it, when with people... Now everyone has a mobile phone and stuff like that. When I was a kid, there were no mobile phones.
Yeah, we were a little more bored.
Too many distractions now.
Yeah. Well, no, so your family was very encouraging, obviously.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And, you know, all the holidays from school, I would go to it's called Procorda. It's a chamber music course. In the east of England, and then later on I did it's called Pressure Cove, similar kind of chamber music course. So I was always really into chamber music and string quartets and piano trios, and was really doing that all the time in the holidays, you know.
But you probably didn't know about like trio sonatas back then, right?
No, I mean, you know, Paco Bell's Canon and everything. But I didn't really know anything about.
Isn't it odd that that genre seems like it's just out of the mainstream?
Yeah.
Because there's so much great stuff.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, I mean, this is the thing, though. When you're studying, it's not a separate thing, is it? Baroque music studies or something. I mean, you know, my kid now plays, I have a son, he's 12, he plays violin, he's working on a Telemann sonatina or something, and, you know, he sings in his choir, the Messiah. I don't think he thinks this is a specialist Baroque study or anything. It's just, you know, music is music, isn't it?
It is.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you always want to be a musician?
No. I didn't even realize, actually, that you could do music as a job. I mean, even when I was at uni, when I finished uni, I remember going around the career fair with a friend of mine did classics, and we went around the career fair thinking, what am I going to do now? What am I going to do for a job? It didn't even occur to me, actually, that it'd be possible to be a musician, that you could earn a living being a musician. It never occurred to me.
You didn't have the people saying, oh, what orchestra do you play in?
No. It was, for me, I was at one of these chamber music courses just as I was graduating Cambridge, and I met a violinist who said, what are you doing now? And I said, I don't know. Thinking about different careers I could go into. And he said, well, have you thought you should, there's a job in my orchestra. Why didn't you apply? It was a principal cello in the Philharmonia Orchestra in London. And he was the leader of the orchestra, and he said, you should apply. You know, we were playing trios together in the chamber music course. And so I did, and I got a trial which lasted about a year and a half or something. And then from there, of course, I started working professionally because I went into other orchestras and chamber music things. You know, I started to get into the
people,
yeah,
right?
Well, exactly. That's how it works. You start doing one thing, and then people recommend you, and you start sort of filling in other things. And started working the London freelance scene a bit, but that was never a plan, I have to say. Yeah.
So you didn't grow up thinking, "Oh, I want to be a dentist or an astronomer," or
no. Not at all. And I never even, I don't think
I
ever considered.
Taking it one day at a time your whole life?
Yeah, I wasn't really thinking, well, what am I going to do when I grow up?
That's great.
I don't know. I just sort of...
Went with it?
Went with it. We go with the flow kind of thing. I mean, maybe there's more pressure nowadays to think, well, I've got to do this age 12 because when I'm older I want to be this, I don't know, an astronaut.
It's surprising how many musicians just keep playing music and then they end up in some area of music.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, they didn't plan it out. They
right.
They couldn't have dreamed it up, usually.
Yeah. You just got to do what we love doing, right?
I mean, you didn't think you'd be a conductor.
No. Didn't even occur to me that was something. No.
It's kind of fun, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I really believe that we should just sort of do what we enjoy, you know, and gravitate towards what's the most fulfilling thing to do and throw oneself into it, and then the world sort of unfolds as it should, maybe, if you're lucky. I don't know.
Especially if you're good at what you enjoy.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wow. So you said a little bit about how you became a conductor. Can you just elaborate? So Bill Christie took you as an assistant?
Yeah. Yeah, well, I was always doing a bit, you know. I remember when I had a job when I was at school in the church choir, and I had to conduct the church choir a bit. And at university as well, I even was putting things together all the time. I just like that, you know. I would find a singer and say, "Hey, you want to play together? I found this really cool piece in the library." And I don't know. I was always sort of let's say a little entrepreneurial about putting people together to do things, because I always sort of I like to feel that I was able to see the kind of potential of people. And I thought, oh, that guy there would sound amazing doing that Monteverdi duet with him. We should try that because it really looks like it's a really interesting piece and we should just give it a go, you know. And I'd say, hey, let's get together. And I don't know, I was always putting things together, I suppose. Although I didn't realise that was being a conductor, you know, I just thought that's... And then if you have to kind of stand in the middle and say, okay, you play, then that's... I suppose it's what you call being a conductor, but I didn't realise I was being a conductor, see what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So then what kind of training did Bill give you?
Well, it was just really a fantastic chance to work in the middle of everything, you know? It's really hard looking back anyway, it's really hard to study to be a conductor because you need, it's very hard to wave in the mirror to a recording or with a piano, you know, you only really learn to do it in the situation. You need a bit of time and experience with an orchestra, learn how to learn what works, what doesn't work. And actually, looking back now, it was the most lucky thing that I could have been doing, because what I was doing was I was preparing, working with the orchestra, working with the singers, but I wasn't really responsible for the performances. You know, would help Bill put things together, and he would come a little bit later and work for the performances. So I had this always chance to experiment a bit, and I suppose that was the biggest learning thing, just doing lots of really good repertoire, big repertoire, a lot of operas, in a position of responsibility as an assistant of trying to put things together, and then, you know, without necessarily the responsibility of having to stand up there and do the shows. And I did that for a number of years, and then finally I started doing a few shows, you know, at the end of things, and then it picked up because we started to do pieces again for the second, third time, fourth time. You know, all Monteverdi operas, Purcell pieces, Rameau operas, Handel operas, in big houses with very wonderful singers, amazing casts. So to be thrown into that situation. And then I sat and I watched how he worked as well with people in the orchestra, and it's just immensely, it was a very rich time for me to be able to just observe, oh, that's how it works. So whole new things like languages, for example, I would sit in language coachings with really wonderful language teachers and singers and just sort of, that's really interesting how they use the text for the language. And yeah, continuo rehearsals, how we orchestrated in Monteverdi, in orchestra rehearsals, how they put things together, what sort of experience the orchestra had as well, because it was, you know, Les Affleurissants was a very experienced orchestra. They'd done tons of Rameau operas and Handel. So I was super lucky. I learned so much.
Yeah, so were you the only assistant?
For that time, yeah.
So did he help you, like, teach you how to study a score or any specific, like, did you have like a lesson with him kind of a situation?
No, it wasn't like that. No. We often spent time together talking through things, often because he would want to send, you know, he would want to work with me so I would be able to communicate his wishes to the singers and to the orchestra. So I learned a lot through that as well. He was often thinking very theatrically about music. Idomeneo, you know, this character, Elettra, should be spitting and violent. Let's really make sure that she's, you know, really intensely full of hatred in her consonants and vowels and that kind of thing. And so, oh, yeah, okay, right, I make the notes. And then just watch how he brought that alive. So I suppose that in itself was the big lessons for me then.
Yeah, it sounds like a good way to get educated. Mm. So, are there any other people that had an influence on you like that?
Yeah, a little bit. In my Prosakov years, I spent a lot of time taking lessons with a great Hungarian teacher called Ferenc Radosz. He taught a lot at Prosakov, and I went to Hungary a few times to learn with him, sometimes bringing scores. He had a very unique way of thinking about music. I enjoyed a lot that sort of Hungarian style of thinking about music. I found very, very interesting.
What is a Hungarian style of thinking about
it? It's quite sort of quite thoughtful, I think. Deeply thought and very sort of emotional, but also Hungarians have this wit about them as well, you know, slightly contrarian sometimes and kind of deeply thoughtful. So I suppose at Prosakov, I keep mentioning this place, but this was a big influence for me. But it was set up by a Hungarian called Sándor Vig, who's a very famous violin teacher. And so he brought all his Hungarian friends and teachers there. So I suppose that's where they made the Hungarian link.
Cool. So, what do you love about your work?
Well, I like traveling a lot, you know. I have to travel a lot for my work. And I like meeting musicians. Especially with Baroque music, I find there's quite a large chance to be very creative with what we do. You know, it's not necessarily things always written down about how we need to do it. So it's a lot of personal preferences and choices we can make in the music. I love that freedom, especially about playing the keyboard as well. It feels very free. You can do what you want a bit. And it's always nice to this week, you know, we're working with Victoria Mulova. Fantastic chance to get to meet her and to play with her. It's just, you know, every time I go somewhere and do something, it feels like there's lots of new things to learn and new things to create. And that's what keeps me alive with that.
So a lot of times when you travel, though, do you get to see a place, or do you, is it just the people that you meet there that, that you like?
No, I like to see a place as well, but it's sort of secondary, I think. I'm not, I mean, yeah, there are some people that travel a lot, and the first thing they do, they buy the guidebook to wherever, and off they go. But it's, no, I'm often days you arrive, and then you walk straight into rehearsals for often six hours a day, and then, you know, and then...
And you're jet-lagged and tired.
Yeah, yeah. But when there's a chance to get out and walk around a little bit, that's always a pleasure to look around, for sure.
Do you like... Are you into food?
Yeah.
So isn't? You like to try the local cuisine in different places?
Yeah. It's always interesting.
Well, I hope you get some good meals while you're here.
Oh, always. In America, there's almost... never-ending choice about everything, isn't it? It's fantastic to so much of everything for.
You know. It's hard to go hungry here.
Well, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
Too many burgers, though. That's a thing. Watch out.
Well, we make a proper burger here, though.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
We know what we're doing. So, play the cello. You play the harpsichord. You conduct. Is there anything else that you wanted to do? Do you write music?
Not for its own sake. There's quite a lot of writing music that I have to do. You know, we do 3 volumes of Boccherini cello concertos at the moment with Nicholas Alstedt, a good friend of mine's cellist, and had to write together 24 cadenzas. You know, so I suppose when I write music, it's often for the purpose of putting on paper some kind of things for the projects that we do,
like for a concert or for a recording. Or
yeah, like there was something we did, some Cavalli things, and we had to rearrange the sort of chorus thing, but for instrumental, I put together a little passacaglia. It's often the case, you know, especially when you do early music. Sometimes you go to an orchestra and we do this, and then you might need to make some version for someone. So I suppose my composing, in inverted commas, is often just the way to prepare the project. Sometimes when there's improvisatory bits or sort of connections or cuts or things that you have to put together. But I wouldn't say I'm a composer in any kind of serious way. But yeah, stylistic composition, I say. You know,
It's okay. So, do you have any advice for young musicians?
Goodness. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, all I can probably think of is just to engage in music in a very forthright and open manner, and just do as much as possible, and with the eyes wide open, and learn as much as possible, and do what you love with a real integrity and passion, and always trying to watch and learn. Be open to new things, and see where it goes. That's what I would advise. Everyone's different routes to everything.
I mean, it's hard to argue with that. No one wants to see people that aren't engaged.
All right. True.
Really in anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, if we want people to come to shows, we should be excited about what we're doing.
Yeah.
Okay, do you have anything cool coming up that you want to mention?
Not very good about thinking about what's in my diary. Yeah, next.
Anything you're excited about, like recordings or concerts, something that you really like?
Yeah, we have we recorded last year this Handel Oratorio Theodora.
That's a good
piece.
Oh,
fantastic piece. It was a real highlight for me of last year, and it's coming out this year. I think it's being released February the 5th.
So that's pretty soon.
Yeah, I think they already released a taster track on Spotify, which is great, because it brings back so many memories of that recording. It was a very intense week. We did 3 big performances and then went straight into the studio. I think we had something like 14 sessions. It's a long piece, you know, these Handel oratorios.
Oh, yeah.
And just, you know, the intensity of that week just all came flooding back when I heard it a year later. I was like, I remember that. Yeah, so that was a highlight. Although it was done in the past, but it's being released in the future.
It's still in the future today.
Exactly, yeah.
Also, it's nice to have a little break from between the recording and when you hear it again, right?
Sure. Yeah, I don't know if you know, when you do a lot of editing, when you listen back to your own recordings and you work with the producer and make edits, you can really go down a wormhole, can't you, of trying to find perfection with the edits, and you listen to it again and again, and then you start to hear things almost like illusions. That note's out of tune. You listen to it again and it wasn't out of tune.
I mean, I've recorded 2 albums last week, and I'm just not ready to edit those.
Yeah.
No, I need a little space.
Bit of time, and then you'll throw yourself into it. And
yeah, then I'll attack
really
it.
Interesting.
Okay, is there anything you want to ask me?
Yeah, what's it like? What's it like being a Baroque violinist in USA?
That's a good question. I mean, it's a lot different from Europe. I mean, if you love Baroque music, it's great to play it all the time. It's really hard to make a living on just Baroque violin in one location, so I have to travel a lot and play with different groups. But other than that, it's pretty awesome. I mean, I get to play so many great things that, you know.
What were your favorite projects you did recently?
I mean, the best has got to be this recording of these French duos I just did of harpsichord solo, French Baroque harpsichord solos, you know, for violin and viola that I arranged.
Oh, nice.
You know, like Rameau and Dufli and Forqueray and like just all the best solos, you know, like Mysterious Barricades, like everything, all the hits.
So how did you get around the sort of harmonic things in terms of the chordal playing on the keyboard? Do you have sort of spread chords on the violin to get
some of them, but also I gave myself way too many double stops. It was really, those sessions were hard, man.
Yeah. I'd like to hear it. Sounds really interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. And then the next day I did John Stanley sonatas. And that was pretty fun. With
John
Stanley, a
British...
blind dude.
Yeah, I didn't know much
right
about Stanley.
Handel,
he wrote
took
organ
over,
things, right? Organ.
Yeah, he was an organist. Apparently he played the violin too. And he took over conducting Messiah when Handel stepped down.
Oh, right. Was he organist? It wasn't at St. Paul's Cathedral.
Maybe. I haven't done the liner notes yet. We can check later.
That's cool.
But really, I mean,
is it good music?
Yeah, good, I mean, stuff? It's pretty light. It's not like virtuoso music, but virtuoso music is kind of almost like a chore to listen to sometimes. You know, like you just want to hear something that sounds nice.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just got 8 sonatas that it's just like nice music.
Good.
He's not trying to beat you up with crazy stuff.
And stylistically, it's sort of in the Baroque, is it? But moving into
late Baroque. You know, he's got a lot of minuets, chilianas. It's just really pretty, like melodic, inventive stuff. You know, a lot of jig kind of last movements too. And it's just really pleasant.
Nice. I should check it out.
Okay. Well, thanks for listening, and please subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can pick up my arrangements on bachfor2.com, and please keep making music with each other. We're going to take a little break here and come back and play something.